but, and so this guy sits next to her, and he didn't pay.
Thanks everyone for coming here. Just gonna introduce this just a little bit, hand off to Daniel. So because of my engineering background, I've been able to dabble in science. That's it, dabble. So I'm not the real deal like some people here. So we're so glad to have Daniel here from the wonderful country of Brazil. And maybe he'll tell you a little bit about us. When did you get to the States?
First time or second time?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah, so first time when?
86.
86. And you go back? What year?
98.
86 to 98?
That year is 16.
2016. All right. So I'm really appreciative for Daniel doing this. We were trying to schedule this for a while. I really wanted to do something in this area, and I think we have 6 weeks of this. We got delayed last week. Actually, we might have another delay. Heads up, just so you know, this is weird. I don't know if we're announcing this yet. I'm making a command decision. June 19th. We will have no electricity in this building. So we're not gonna have the typical Sunday. I think we're gonna pre-record the service. Because we were thinking about the Keswick or other places to do it, but actually we're probably gonna pre-record it for that week because the electrical system here, fixing it, is, I'm told, a non-trivial task. And so no electricity, so we'll talk about this too. We're looking here for 6 weeks with Daniel and to talk about science and faith issues, especially in life on the biological side, is what I'm seeing in the outline. So anyway, so glad to have you and Marta, and you have, by the way, two daughters, right?
Two daughters, Beatrice and Carolyn.
Beatrice and Carolyn, right. And every once in a while they've been here, both of them have been here, right? Yeah, the last couple, yeah. Well, let me just pray, get started, and I'll hand off to Daniel. Lord, thank you for the wonder of creation, the wonder of our own bodies. It's not just external creation. We are part of creation as creatures. And the more we understand about our own bodies, the more we are amazed by them, amazed by life at the cellular level, and getting down to the subcellular level. Lord, it's just amazing what you've done. And Lord, we pray that we would learn about it, learn rightly here. Would you be with Daniel as he teaches us? We'd be blessed by the truth of the glory of you as creator. Amen.
So I think I'll be wearing a mask because I just come out of COVID. So I don't know if I'm still shedding virus or not. Most likely not. My daughter said, no, it's been 10 days now from the beginning of it. So, but just in case, the room is not too big, so I'll wear a mask all the time. You should understand what I'm saying, my accent or something, plus they stop me, repeat what the word is said. Don't worry. Just go for it. It's important for us to just talk and understand this. What I'm trying to convey here. So about 98, I went to move back to Brazil, and I went to work in a university, the second in the ranking in Brazil. The chemistry department is a large chemistry department, and so it was kind of interesting to just start getting the feeling of the world of chemistry. It's a large department. There's about almost 100 professors working there. Lots of buildings, research buildings, and I was lost in the beginning, a bit of all that stuff. And we had like 500 students, grad students, only the chemistry department, so it's a big place. In contrast, when I started going to my chemistry major, I started Bob Jones University in South Carolina. We have 4 professors in the chemistry department. Like 18 kids, you know, with a chemistry major. So just to see the difference in the work where I was. And I ended up working with a technique called circular dichroism. I was trying to back then, we were trying to get the structure of proteins. It was a big chunk of my work. Then later, I moved on to electron microscopy, atomic force microscopy, techniques for seeing small things, very small things. And among a mix of all this, start related to all the workers and students, and knowing the university, you know, meeting people outside the department and all that. So it slowly start building up the, you know, what was the academic environment. And after a few years, you had this feeling, like very strange feeling of there were two worlds apart. The guys in the science, the hard science, they thought differently from the soft science people. So quickly, you know, we're not good people, of course. We're pretty mean, so but we start putting bad words, you know, calling people like those guys in the psychology department, they're out of this planet, you know, they're crazy, you know, sociology, philosophy, good language, and those guys are. So we just quickly labeled them, they're all communists. forget about them. Engineering, hard science, we are, you know, building up the country, paying taxes, and these guys are all trying to get our money and spread it to all kinds of crazy projects. You know, this is the environment. It's so insane because we saw people in those art department doing all kinds of, you know, for us, chemists, you know, like, what, you know, this guy has spent all kinds of money from the government, grants, financing, things like art exposition. A naked man, mature adult, naked, and children come and touch the guy. What? This is crazy. This doesn't make any sense at all. Probably this is in the US, probably completely illegal, right? I don't know. But in Brazil, they did this. So, this kind of stuff, no. So, I can't put in words. You know, I'm this thing, you know, it's two different ways of thinking. Most professors, talk to them, just, you know, having lunch, they slowly start getting the idea, they believe in something. But they'll never really publicly say what it was. So, but they believe in something. Nobody said, oh, I believe only atoms and molecules, and that's it. Completely materialistic. It was very rare to find a guy like that. Mostly, Brazil is very influenced by French positivism, you know. So it's really like, they believe in something. Something's there, but they don't know what it is. Not the biblical God, nothing like that. But not hard or atheists. So this is all like, is happening? What's that? And I came to read books to help me. The one guy that helped me start making sense of all of this, I think most of you guys read it, was Franz Schaefer. Back in the 70s, 60s, he started formulating a lot of these things that started helping the church. That his idea was not helping people from the seminary. He was Vantil's student. But Vantil was a guy for the high-level guys, not me. but Schaefer got Vantil and came to the church. It's like, oh, I'm reading Vantil for you guys. And like, oh, I understand what you're saying. So I'm just saying all these things just to introduce a little bit. This is not the class yet. So this is just a quick introduction to all of these feelings. And now comes from this thing here. Let's start with Romans chapter 1. For the wrath of God is revealed from heaven against all ungodliness and unrighteousness of men, who by their unrighteousness suppress the truth. For what can be known about God is plain to them. Because, here underlined, because God has shown it to them. Not like because they could figure out, they reasoned very well. No, because God, for his invisible attributes, namely his eternal power and divine nature, have been clearly perceived ever since the creation of the world in the things that have been made. So they are without excuse. For although they knew God, they did not honor him as God, or give thanks to him, but they became contaminated in their foolish hearts. Claiming to be wise, they became foolish. So, by using the present climate of our days, it's not really present at all. So this thing started a long time ago. But roughly, that the reality is very complex. So you can see a little bit from two, three different angles, try to sum. But every time we sum up things, we might sin against other people because we might have left outside something. But so this is a quick attempt just to get to where we are now. So let's go with Oppenheimer. He's a very smart guy. Right? He's a children's like, he developed the Born Oppenheimer approximation for molecular wave functions, worked on the theory of electrons and positrons, the Oppenheimer-Phillips process in nuclear fusion. He's the first one got the prediction of quantum tunneling. This is an amazing thing. And this guy was nothing like the head of all those Alamos during the war. So look at what he said. Christianity was necessary for the beginning of modern science for the simple reason that Christianity created a climate of thought which put man in a position to investigate the form of the universe. It's amazing that he was able to say that, even though he is being contaminated by the philosophy coming from the 18th century, this guy said something quite interesting and truthful. So, back in the beginning of, right after Reformation, we have most scientists shared the outlook of Christianity, believing that there is a reasonable God. Right? He created a reasonable universe. And thus man, by using reason, could find out the universe's form. That was the base of what man's thinking in 1600. You can get Bacon, for example. Pretty much like that. He summarized this big main Bacon for all the general thought there in Europe, 1600. So, this is very interesting. So, what they call early science, early modern science, right, was natural science and not naturalistic. This is very important to think of how we see these things. Although he held to the uniformity of natural cause, it did not conceive of God and man as coupled machinery. So those terms are very important to think of a machine. Like, you think about a machine, you think about parts, right? Gears working together. So God taught in the machine, we part of the machine. The early science never thought like that. Let's move on. So, coming to the next crucial stage of thinking, Kant and Rousseau, now jumping 1700s. So those guys work in two ways that really start cementing the idea of, from Bacon, God and nature were two real things, and God was not part of the machine. But as men start moving on, Kant and Rousseau, now they start becoming so independent from God that they want this freedom, not from God, from everything, complete absolute freedom, and a freedom without a need for redemption, which this is also very dramatic for what's happening here. And then you have Hegel following that, and then really things start changing because Hegel, he breaks all the rules of epistemology, methods of acquiring knowledge. So he developed a dialectic method where, if this is correct, the opposite is wrong. So he the way the pieces and pieces, that's the way everybody was predicting up to that point. But he proposed this crazy thing that the result of a negation could be become a synthesis, so kind of fusing two things to create another thing. So the way we see the learned knowledge start changing to a very strange thing that never man thought before. So that throws up into the climate of our day. So Hegel, insists on keeping his rationalism in rebellion, autonomy or partial autonomous areas, even if it means he must give up his rationality. So mankind, we're on a point today that it's really insane the way modern man is thinking. There's no, that with Kierkegaard following that, every modern man is born. There's no hope of unified field of knowledge, just the hope at all. So you are, you know, whatever it is. I took this picture today from the my old, you know, Escape from Reason book. And you see this flow of the philosopher Kant, Hegel, the line of despair that flows into the art, music, general culture, and theology. So today we have these two worlds, the secular existentialism, the religious existentialism. And it's so interesting that Schaeffer talked about a lot of his work on religious existentialism. And if I saw, you know, if you watched CNN a couple months ago, an interview with Frank Schaeffer, it's so sad, he cried. He became a complete atheist. He's fighting now for abortion, even though he made a nice movie, whatever should happen with, what happened to the human race with Francis, his father, helped to the movement to come over today to maybe the reverse of by the Supreme Court of Roe. So he really contributed to that, and he was really regretting before the gathered of CNN and participated in all that. So he became an existential. He launched a book saying, have children, eat well, live and have peace, like as a true existentialist. So sad that you follow this way. But we can see art, music, general, all of this permeates in the general culture up to the point of theology. So seminaries changing, abolished to Genesis. That's just a mythical introduction of a word that never existed. So what's my point here, quickly go through this thing here. So we have these two fields, you know, philosophizing, trying to, you know, see reality in two different ways. So from this point on, we have what we call analytics philosophy and continental philosophy disputing all this field of knowledge, you know, who knows how to interpret. So most of the things analytical, which took hold strongly in England, were mathematicians, logicians. They're notorious for, you know, trying to bring all the modern concepts of science we have today and keep to the right conclusion of the data we get. The other field came more from, both from Germany, basically the modern one, way of thinking. Just went more to France and Germany and reinterpreted Kant, Hegel, Kierkegaard, and guys like Marx, reapplied that to immanent materialism. And most importantly, this is a big name. I don't know if you guys know this guy. Have you ever heard of Antonio Gramsci? Never heard of this guy? He is really big, very important. Italian guy, spent 20 years in prison. He was a communist, so assist Italian threw him in prison. That's where he rethought everything he knew about philosophy, and he rewrites how to preach Marxism in a culture without getting guns and start shooting people, like the way the Soviets did it, and killed 20 million of the most important people in Russia, were the middle class, engineers, the science people. So this guy is the PhD thesis of two persons we know very well, Hillary Clinton and former President Barack Obama. So, like, oh, interesting, because people really drink and eat for wine produced in prison. And that, you know, he's pretty smart. You know, he's a genius guy. Poor guy, he died in prison. So he started speaking this, I summarize quickly, that the two fields are disputing the way we think with society. And this is so much in culture today that everybody can do whatever. A man can say that you, I'm a woman, and then you compete in sports against other women, even though you're a man. 35% more muscle power than, statistically speaking, generally speaking. So this is, you know, completely insane. But that's what I, you know, remember when we started. So, analytical thinking is actually losing ground, lost ground to these guys, what do you call in the left, or whatever you want to say. So the soft science is kind of eating up the hard science in the way we interpret reality. That's basically what's happening now. So, well, let's fix this. Well, you can say the new Hegelian view, even with isometries of relativity, all of this has really changed the way Western science is doing science. So, it's untamed objectivity, you know, it's just gone. So, just summarize. They all start in Germany, the first dominant English-speaking world of philosophy for several generations. The other was developed mainly in Germany and France. It took a full hold in sociology, economics, history, literary theory, departments in America's elite institutions later. The difference between these two approaches and modes of philosophy is significant. The first is interest in the acquisition of greater and more precise knowledge of the objective world through the use of mathematics and logic to support the hard science. The second is concerned with the inner existential experience of human person, society, and how those experiences shape, influence, or even construct the project that the first group claims to be carrying out. So this is the environment of thinking. So, what's this picture? Philadelphia, February 22nd, 1861. You're not there, right? But maybe your great-grandfather? Maybe. Let's think that this is Mark's great-great-grandfather sitting there, right? Watching Abraham Lincoln give his speech saying, welcome Kansas to the Union. These people sitting there in 1861, downtown Philly, they have more in common with people from the Bible 2,000 or 3,000 years ago than with us here in Glenside today, even though we're 20 miles from this place. But 150 years from now. Can you see that? What happened in the last 150 years? The way society thought. What's new under the sun? Maybe one thing, electricity, that changed mankind completely. So I think we can see world before electricity and the world after electricity. It's, with electricity, everything starts booming. One thing after the other, and knowledge went like this, exponential growth. All right. So, that's good to this guy here. So, remember, so all of this, now you're gonna throw guys in the science. You're gonna put Darwin in the middle of all this thinking, what's influencing him. It's not like completely a blank word. This is Darwin's mind now. It's all of this influencing him and many others after him. So, chemistry before biology. This is really important to grab the idea. Biology is one thing, chemistry is another thing. So abiogenesis means there was no life before, there's nothing. Let's assume that whatever happened before, it brought us to this beautiful world. water, clouds in the sky, rain is no, but zero life, zero, zero. Just water, CO2, ammonia, methane, simple molecules. They love to be who they are. They're not getting together, not because they have very low energy, stable. They want to stay the way they are. Okay, this is the world we're talking about. So forget biology. It's just chemistry. Because there is no biology. Nothing there. So, quick introduction. I think it's quite funny. Just the way the scripture puts it, the earth was without form and void, Genesis chapter 1. And darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the waters. And Peter, let's go to jump to Peter now. And the earth was formed out of water and through water by the word of God. You know what? I think God loves water molecules. I think, you know, this simple thing, we saw this all the way. You know, we learned first thing, you know, in chemistry class when we were in junior high school. I think God's like, oh, this is a gas, you know, two gas, you know, boiling point, super low, all minus 200. It puts together, and then it's plus 100 Celsius. How come? You know, strange molecules. It's all kinds of weird stuff about water. When it freezes, it becomes lighter than the liquid. So it floats. So thanks God, you know, won't kill all the fish in the ocean. The ocean froze all the way to the bottom. And that it's a very interesting, I think, that the first miracle, this weird story that, you know, Mary comes to Jesus and says, hey, help those guys, they ran out of wine. And Jesus is like, come on, woman. It's not my time yet. You know, then the servants, the employees come, or the party says, okay, fill the jars with water and take to the boss. Get a jar of water, go there. Wow, really great wine, amazing. Now, stop a second and think. As a scientist, you're a physicist, right? Mark's a chemist, who else here in science? Engineer. Think about what happened in that few seconds, walk with a jar of water to the party. This change, no, nuclear fusion, let's say. Protons, electrons, neutrons built up heavier atoms of sulfur. We have lots of. There are about 400 different molecules in wine. Most of them, as carbon, nitrogen, oxygen, of course hydrogen, sulfur, the tiny little, you know, things that makes the wine so great. So, in a word that Jesus is Paul, all of these unbelievable nuclear fusions and chemistry reactions happen in a split of a second in the help from water and wine. So, God really loves water. And if it's true, my rationale here with the scripture, everybody knows, we learned this from high school, right? How much of our body in mass is water?
70?
Yeah, roughly 2/3, right? In mass. But what about if you do molecules? No, every protein, lipids, salts in general, and you add, come with this absurd large number. Look at this. We are water. This is just glue that God invented to put together. So you can, the water man, you know, the movie. You can just imagine the movie, a scene, you know, you're walking, it's just water. And then God put some protein there and glued the water, so the water's all stuck. So that's my theory, just to relax the intervention. So God loves water and made us water. Talking water. So, okay, let's start it. Abiogenesis. The origin of life from non-living matter. So we have to remember that. There's nothing before that of vital chances, right? We must take into account the condition of the Earth about 4 billion years ago. So we're going to talk of what the society sends information to us. 4 billion years ago, life started. Okay, what was back then? Okay. Another thing to think and consider. For the synthesis to be categorized as being prebiotically relevant, this word is very important here, relevant, it must use chemical reagents and conditions that are presumed to be available upon an early Earth or accessible to an early Earth. So those are, okay, let's start reasoning now together. What happened back there, the life appeared, okay? So it takes place before biology, as I started saying before. Before biological evolution happened, it's all before that. So nothing can begin in terms of evolving without the chemistry before. So prebiotic is prebiology. Clear? Good? So what's life? We have to define. Some guys attempted to do that, you know, responsiveness to the environment, right? It gets cold, or we react to the environment all the time. We grow, we change. Ability to reproduce, metabolism, we breathe. Small animals, everything needs oxygen, machinery of life. Maintain homeostasis. This is an amazing thing. Oh my goodness, I study about those days, mind-boggling. The complex machine to make us stable. being made of cells, passing traits into offspring. So, this is life. That's, we're trying to define what's life. So, call something alive. So, homeostasis, all this, you know, they could have a whole class just to study this. Marvel I got made in a homeostasis, what it is. Unbelievable. Cell organization, reproduction, metabolism, homeostasis, another guy just developed the idea. Okay, so this is what we call life. Maybe they kind of agreed that, oh, this is life. They say something is alive. Okay. So this is a journal on evolution education from September 2012. Look at this, prebiotic chemistry. Can be understood to mean various things. Chemistry which occurred before life began, or the chemistry which led to life on Earth and possibly on other planets. Workers in the field practically define it as a naturally occurring, mainly organic chemistry in planetary order, solar system environments, which may have contributed to the origin of life on Earth or elsewhere. The terms abiotic chemistry, or chemistry takes in the absence of biology, so this is also a very good term. Chemistry happens in the absence of biology. Prebiotic chemistry, in some sense, synonyms. Since it generally assumes that the universe is not co-directed, and since it's not known that what process led to the origin of life, the study of prebiotic chemistry almost certainly includes both productive and non-productive chemical processes. Which means a lot of stuff happened. But it doesn't matter if it happened, it doesn't have an orientation to go anywhere, so it just goes back. So probably it was this back and forth, and one day somehow it kept coming forward to us. So what's an early Earth conditions? This is part of the conversation. So whatever the conditions were, it's not a nice laboratory. It wasn't at all that. Here in the lab, we can put things together, find chemicals, just on the internet order, it becomes 100%, 99.9999 pure, great. So everything had to be made from very simple organic stuff. Ammonia, methane, oxygen, CO2, HS2, sulfate water, formaldehyde, carbonate, formate, cyanide, maybe hydroxide. So these are the stuff probably going around. There were no discernible source of naturally occurring homochiral amino acids. And let's talk a lot about that. The polymerized into proteins. So this is start like going from the small blocks, the basic ones, to something bigger. Sugar, homochiral sugars, no phospholipids, no human design coupling agents, protecting groups. That's what we do in lab, you know, when you're gonna make a synthesis. No glass, nice glass vessels. Like Steve makes his company to put stuff inside, nothing to protect, no drugs, nothing, there's nothing there, right? No degassing step, no vacuum pumps, no. So, it's, what it means, is a world with a lot of barriers for these guys to walk against, to go against. Okay? So, life is made of four big groups of molecules, you know, polysaccharides, proteins, nucleic acids, lipids. They're building blocks. Remember, these are the CO2, the water, they're the small guys. Let's say they're the sand grain, and the cinder block we buy to make a wall is from this guy's here. So, what's that? Sugars, so polysaccharides made of sugars. Sugars can encode information. That's important to think about. Proteins, same thing. Amino acids, they need catalysts, you know, to be synthesized. They're large proteins. Also, they encode information. Nucleic acids, the famous RNA, DNA, made of a nitrogen-based link for pentose, 5-carbon sugar, link for phosphate, and all of this is big encoded information. We all know that. And lipids, you know, building blocks, fatty acids, cholesterol, phosphates, often ethanolamine. All of these guys are all involved in the machine to make life. So if you talk about prebiotic, you know, world back then, they had to make those things here go towards life. So far so good? Good. Okay, so quick review. What's a polysaccharide? This is this guy here. No, they're big molecules made of the smaller ones. They're all connected. The angles here, they have to be always precise angles. This thing can connect like this or connect like that.
Change everything.
We'll give that an example. So this is starch, right? We use a lot in our food. We eat a lot of starch. It breaks down and puts a lot of energy for us. Proteins, these guys are super big, right? Now, if I talk about this, this is 1.7 angstrom in size. These guys here, if you put in a straight line, a primary structure can go hundreds and hundreds of nanometers. Monstrous compared to in the cell puts together these amino acids. And as it's put together, this thing starts shaping up in 3D, so we call the secondary structure. And then it goes to a point, it completely folds this tertiary structure. This big blob of stuff. And finally, to see it, it's just only one site. It's usable. So you have this monstrous structure for one little place where you can dot something. You take your aspirin, you have a headache, the aspirin goes, boom, connect to one precise site. It's called docking. That's what I did. I was doing my master's degree. You had all these curves on cyclodicroism, and you had a docking of a pharmacon. And then, bingo, you see the curve change just because of the tiny docking of a small molecule on this huge site and the tertiary structure. Boom, change a little bit. So this is a good example of heme. This is our blood, main molecule. It has an iron atom right in the middle, and it's an amazing thing. That's the speed of where oxygen binds here is 10 to the minus 11 seconds inside your lungs. The thing takes off and goes to your cells, and it's released in 10 to the minus 10 seconds to your cell. Your cell just grabs CO2 from your cell in this, you know, 10 to the minus 10 seconds. Can you imagine what it is? This 1 second divided by 10 billion. You can't think about that. But that's the speed of how these things happen. But if it wasn't iron, or one small mistake here, an angle here, bingo, you're done. You're super sick. So just an example. And this tertiary put, there's stuff in our body cells that these monster molecules can get together with other monsters we call quaternary structure. let's try to build up before we make a point in the complex of these structures compared to the small poor guy water. So DNA, RNA, bunch of sugar all connected amazingly. They're super long. If you stretch out, it's like gold, like meters long. Unbelievable. Excuse me. Now, think about the four sugars that made it. Look at the small, the thymine. You don't find the RNA, you find the uracil. And look at the two molecules. What's the difference? One methyl group, hydrogen is removed from there. Here's a methyl group, remove the hydrogen there. It makes completely different machine. Was one atom changing. And just throwing this guy on you guys just to grab the feeling. You know, lipids, you know, another amazing stuff all around us, forming us, you know, fat stuff that we needed. And you have this huge stuff of hydrophilic and hydrophobic. The phobic means fear of. So these things, they don't like water, so they push water outside. But remember, we were made of hot water. So, what happened? Proteins, remember the shape I was talking about? It happens because it have water all around it. It's water with magnetic fields, because they're just protons, they have charge. That helps to shape up this. But as water is a blessing, it can be a curse, because water shoots against this binding chemistry like a missile, we call hydrolysis, and break them. I thought no life, no water. So this is just to show the whole picture of the thing. Now, we didn't have this back in the, 4 billion years ago. This is what you have in our lives. So nice to make a reaction. You know, controlled environment. Look at this. You react, right pressure, right temperature, pH control. Then you remove, it's typical my lab, you know, nice stuff. Distillation, you know, you get your product. You don't want it to stay around with the other stuff. You want to get it out of there, make it pure. This is more like your high school apparatus, chemistry, you know, distillation. That's, you know, that's what we do all the time now. We don't want our good stuff, you know, sitting there. We want to get it out, make it pure. Then we purify more and more. So this is to show the big contrast in the back, where in the Earth 4 billion years ago, they have to put all these guys together without any of that. So it's a big task. So it's too complicated. So let's get back to our world, right? We know what's different. We all are very familiar with that. We put these things together. We grew up. Our dad called us. I'll show you how to change a tire. It's the first thing you learn when you're 10 years old or something. Or it will last. Now we're gonna get Mark's great 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 grandfather, right? Never saw a car in his life. You're gonna bring him to the present and say, Mark, what's it? A DECA founder? 10 generation? Let's get him to, you're gonna build up a car. I'll give you all the parts for you. Up a car? Yeah. What we're talking about. Automobile. Put a horse in front of a wagon? No, there's no horse. There's no, it's different. Different how? That's the task. You don't know, never seen a car before in your life, and you're going to put all the parts together. What's the chance of this guy being successful in having this car run? What about zero?
Yeah,
what about if you give a nice, you know, blueprint, you know, nice map, put together? 110 years? He's very smart. Got all his genes, right? Maybe in a few years he puts together all the parts, he figured out how to do it. So, was back 4 billion years ago like that? A situation like that? Let's think about it. It's more like that. We're gonna get a car, parts. We're gonna throw a tire south of Australia. We're gonna throw part of the stuff North Pole. And we're gonna spread this on the planet. And tell him, go find it. Find what? Tire? I don't know what tire is. Don't know what it looks like. No problem. It's somewhere over there. So the problem got a little bigger for Mark's Deca father or something, right? Wait a minute. There are theories that maybe, remember, this block of building the car is too big already. If you compare, you know, our water to the protein, we have to make this, the earth is too small. So let's spread this guy over here. Let's put a tire in Alpha Centauri. And then the steering wheel, who knows, would start 100 light years away from us. And tell Mark's great grandfather, go find it. Somewhere over there. So that's the task he has. But there's another problem to put together. Even if he finds a steering wheel in Alpha Centauri and comes backwards running to grab another part, that took a few years to do that. And what think it happened to parts sitting around?
Corrode?
Yes, sir. Nothing sits around here. So his great-great-grandfather comes back and, what? What happened? It took 100 years to find some parts. Just the car is gone. So this is the situation we're talking about back, 4 billion years ago. Whatever happened there is something like this. You know, you have to put together things in ways that you know why you put these things together. So, the synthesis problem. The synthesis, let's say, making our car, the synthesis, right? Molecules that compose the living system almost always show homochirality. So, what is homochirality? Homochirality, imagine your right hand in front of the mirror. The image doesn't fit your right hand. That's what we call homochirality. You cannot get your left glove and fit in your right hand. It won't go. So this is homochirality. So molecules have that. The same molecule can have a mirror image and they don't fit together. One can be a wonderful medicine for you. The other can kill you. It's the same stuff. What in the world? So this is a big problem. When building molecular systems, constant redesigns are needed. So in the lab, you make a project. Okay, arrive on your project. Just to find out that, to get there we had to add something and it didn't work. We have to go back. So this is typical in research, back and forth. Because it didn't work the way you expected. So, another thing is reactions start, when to stop. This is a big problem. You have to know when to stop. Inside the cells, it's a marvelous machine to cut the machinery or put it together. If not, you're going to be sick, you're going to die. So, there's no target to go. We're going to where? Mark's great-great-grandfather got a wheel, and then where did he put this wheel? Where? What? Where are those? So this is what's happened. Time called time. Instead, no, a lot of people say, oh, time is the friend that causes everything. But time also can be the enemy. Molecules decompose all the time. They don't sit there. A prebiotic system doesn't have the ability to easily purify structures. Also, we have to do a big problem with yield. You produce something. For the next step, I need 20% of this thing pure, but it produces only 2-3%. So you're never going to get to step 3 or 4 because you don't have enough here. Well, this is, you know, paramount. The problem gets really, really big. So for each of these steps, essential for the chemist, a very hard in prebiotic. Because chemists in the lab, we consider all this all the time and make the changes. So, but nature back there 4 billion years ago knew nothing about molecular structure. So, mass transfer problem, oh my goodness, this is a huge problem too. It's a killer for synthetic roots, definitely, many of them. So there's no notebook in the lab, in nature, to keep track about that, and then you can go back and oh, okay, it didn't work that. Let's think here. Okay, let's make this change here. So there's nothing there. So this is the situation. It's what we call the synthesis problem. Summarizing this. Molecules, they care less about life. Just molecules. Organisms care about life. Out. Chemistry is completely different to that. The water here you're breathing in the air, it makes her feel more comfortable than the super dry air. But the water doesn't know that. Just our body knows that. So unless a biologically derived entities act upon them, molecules have never been shown to evolve toward life. So that's the point of the class. Never. So whatever you have read and learned up to this point, the focus to show that you never, you know, it is. Remember the introduction, the academic thought of the world. Truth is not the environment of science at all, unfortunately. So, right? So, we still were learning this in our schools. Farmer's primordial soup, made in New Jersey, right? So ingredients, organic compounds, hydrocarbons, biomolecules like amino acids. Instructions, store, add energy, boom, life. That's still out there. Probably have seen that, you learn all these things right in school. So how did it happen? It happened like this. The molecules, the simple guys, floating around with energy, heat from the volcano, the water. The first bigger ones got together, cell, boom, this guy's out of the water. A billion years, something like that, it happened. It happened because they're here. So that's forensic, that's not induction. Okay, so let's get to this. So these guys, unbelievable. Conversation, great talk show. I think this, it's here in England. So, interviewing these all smart people, right? Oxford people, computational physiology professor. So, the guy already asked him, a few lightning strikes, and then poof, cell forms. That's how life began. And that's your GCSE, no, this is England, right, not America. You don't talk about GCSE for high school? No, right, yeah, this is England. It's not too bad at all, like he's kind of a plain words, so this was not like that, but I don't know, it's not bad at all, so it's kind of a, no, this is what, out there for the public to see, this is the environment, you know. Instead of him, no, it didn't happen like that. We don't know, you know, we're working hard. So there's nothing like that. Just this. Of course, he doesn't want to lose his grant, so he can't say. So, this guy from our consultant in the works, I thought we could do that, you know, pop culture, we're publishing clickbait, academics influence perception, accomplishment. So, what's out there? What do people believe? Let's see. Survey results. Question. Do you believe the following is true or false? Scientists researching the origin of life have created complex life forms from scratch. That is, in laboratory experiments that approximate Earth's early atmosphere, scientists have mixed chemicals believed to exist before the first life forms to successfully create complex life forms such as frogs. What do you think is the result?
Who's not the theory?
Wow. About 41% said true. General American population. Ah, maybe it's not too bad. Most people said no way. Now let's ask again the questions. Remove frogs. Let's add bacteria. True or false? Throw together a lot and create a lab a simple form of bacteria. Now, most people said yes. It's true. 72% of our population. But because bacteria gives ideas something very simple, it's all, yeah, maybe they figure out how to do it. Summarizing, promoter soup model continues to be upheld in top even high school. Professor, those two guys mentioned. Oh, not too bad at all. The other guy didn't stop to brag. He kind of, if you watch it, you feel that he's going to interview somebody, he doesn't do anything. So the general public is terribly confused upon the origin of life claims, synthetic life claims, all that. So this is the situation. Now, I don't know if I keep going or stop here. So it's 10:15, finish, right? But 10 more minutes. Because what comes next? Oh, you can go to this. Everybody knows Dunning-Kruger effect. I've heard about it. That measures us. We finish college, you got a degree, right? Our confidence is all the way up here. I have a major in chemistry. I know chemistry now. So it's called the peak of stupidity. After you get a job, you start working 4 or 5 years, you're like, oh my gosh, I'm in despair. And then slow, you know, the slope of enlightenment. You know, after 20, 30 years,
I think I know something.
We used to have a joke with the students. They finish their majors. They thought they'd go up. They finished their PhD, and then they said, now I know nothing. So, unfortunately, this is done by people doing good research. And it's pretty much what happens with all of us, society in general. We can remember when you became a Christian, right? A year after you became a Christian, you thought you now you know God, you know the Bible, you know everything about Christian life, faith. You know, 40 years later, like, why are you here 40 years later in Christian life? So maybe a little parallel. But this, you know, it's everywhere around it, you know. And if you remember the words of Paul in Romans chapter 1, this thing is work operating everywhere. God is doing hard work to keep us on track. Amazingly. So, next, which I don't know if I leave for next class or not. It's good to stop now. Okay. So, what's coming for next class? Then we're going to look at the construction of these things. What, remember, Hulk Arad, I just mentioned. What these guys, the complex of these building blocks, really big problems everywhere. This thing here, chiral-induced screen selectivity is mind-boggling. No. It's all of electrons and protons in the middle of the cells and what's alive. And magnetic fields, all this change of current shaping up cells. It's like, what? No, it's amazing. Channels inside the cell, how water goes inside, water comes out. How much is much? How to control that? Is there a valve up in the cell? Open up and close? So how does this thing work? The machine is mind-boggling. So, in all of this, in the end, you just go with your face on the ground where it comes. God gets bigger and bigger. That's the point of all of it. The weightiness of how heavy is God's glory. The more ignorant to you what we are, you know, but when you become Christian, I'm a sinner, God forgive me. Yeah, I'm a sinner. But after 20, 30 years, you're sinning. That's the first, you know, first curve of progressing Christian life. The cross is big in the beginning, it gets much bigger as you grow older, and how sinful we are. So this is the thing, you know, look at these things. Wow, God is with me. Because he thought about all of these things before as he was planning to make us. And with all this wanting, joking, or maybe it's not joking, maybe it's true, but this wanting, you know, walking water that we are, it puts his image in us. And we are like God, finite, small. But nonetheless, him. All the glory to God. Questions, want to comment, say something? Yep.
I really enjoyed the beginning of your presentation, just the acquisition of knowledge and pursuit of truth and all that. I'm just wondering, when you think about, that the pursuit of truth, all of a sudden it seemed like we split, we diverged. We had people that believed in God first and said, okay, everything I'm experiencing, seeing is proof of God. And this other camp seemed to be saying, okay, we have to prove there is no God, almost. With the acquisition of knowledge and the more and more knowledge then I'm going to somehow prove that you're all wrong and we're right. Where do you see that going? Does it ever come back?
Good question. Ever come back? Most likely not, unless science becomes a little more reasonable and it comes to the point, yeah, okay, maybe life was designed by somebody, somehow. We don't know. We don't care who he is. And then maybe paganism will come back. That's a good possibility. You can start feeling that. You can see people talk about defense side. Let's pass laws that you can kill your child a month after it was born. That's what the pagans did. The Indians did it in the Amazon forest. It's not a problem if you have three wives together. You can have three people. So family becomes something completely different now. So whatever. There's no truth, so man is the completely free to do whatever. He hates science, Mother Man, actually, because modern science dictates that you are a man. Mm-hmm. You have an XY chromosome. Fighting against that, it's very dangerous. Mm-hmm. Start adding hormones for you to stop, shed all of your body hair, and you look like a girl, and so on. These things can kill you. If you have cancer, who knows what happens? Even and psychologically, a lot of people, fortunately, commit suicide. All this later on in their lives. So, in going through where man is the center is very dangerous. Very dangerous. Then you can add to this intelligent artificial intelligence. AI is coming big time. It's very nice if the church discuss this. AI is going to take, what's the role of AI in the future of society? Remember the picture of Philadelphia, right? They have, those people have more in common with Abraham from the Bible than with us. Because, come on, we can go to the moon, fly to a rocket with the computing power on this phone. This is insane. Actually, you can even have apps to do synthetic chemistry on the phone. So AI is gonna, it's coming, it's already here, and it's gonna just grow and grow, and it's gonna substitute man, it's gonna make it to a new, create new beings in the future. I don't know, anybody watch the Westworld? What? Me? Jack? It's a little bit, you know, there's a lot of some nakedness there, but the nakedness is from the robots. But they're, of course, real women. But the story goes like this. Robots, that's the point, they start creating consciousness, self-consciousness. And there's a big rebellion. It's very interesting. But that's what people are thinking, where AI, future AI, is going to take us. Because it's a very obvious thing. If the Earth produced life without orientation, no goal, no target, why not the AI that we make somehow at one point will become conscious and become a being? Things like that. If you watch, you know, I think, remember those, the Snap Schaefer made it? If you watch stuff, you know where those people are thinking like 20, 30, 40 years ahead.
I thought that the proof given was basically time plus chance. Time plus chance and infinite time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just happened once that they got it right.
Uh-huh.
You know, over scrillions of years.
But the problem is, it's just 4 billion years.
Somebody
you think there's a lot.
Yeah.
But the chance for this to happen, and the number of atoms available is not that many if you compare it to the task of building up all of these. So now people talk about weird stuff. There's all kinds of new theories trying to replace new Darwinism. One it is, oh, it came from another planet. Cells came, the meteor, boom, landed here, bingo.
Yeah, but where did that come from?
Yeah. All right, but then, so how come it's life on another planet? Where did that come from?
It's the same thing. You just push the problem for somebody else, next generation, to solve it. But it's we have to understand this is a war for souls. That's what I have to understand. It's more important than how many kids in the church we're losing, because this is kind of a noise all the time in their learning of the Bible. Mm-hmm. You know, it gets to a point this is like, my dad and mom, they're not right. And plus, you can see some patterns in the church, problems inside the church. Of course, a person can create all kinds of excuses, but we have to do a good job in terms of making more an excuse, you know, for leaving faith.
I don't know if we have time for this, but I think it's a big. What about the dishonesty in the scientific community?
Honesty.
Dishonesty.
Dishonesty.
In the scientific community toward this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. If you talk to them, they seem very honest people, and they're excellent people doing all this. I'm not better than they are. I'm not saying that those guys are horrible, no. But we know that we have a deceitful heart. They don't know what they're not being honest. You talk to them, they're good people, hard workers. But there is this underlying thing that we are creating all this. Because we think we're doing our best, far from the truth.
Yeah, I can't remember who the Washington Post
long-term science columnist was, science reporter was, but he said something I'll never forget. He said, you know, these scientists that I interview, they'll defend and talk about standard scientific models, whether neo-Darwinism or whatever, fine. He says, then when I get a few beers in them, they start to, this is the Washington Post, you know, and he was, and that's my experience a little bit, even though I haven't been in the field, is the initial defense, we know all this, nothing's wrong, and especially those institutions like the NCSC, who are paid to defend, that's their reason for existence, really is to promote neo-Darwinism in the school systems and defend that all that. And so the frontline defenders, often what you hear is real, you know, confidence. We know this, we know this, we know this. And then you get into the scientific literature, or you get four beers in them, it's like, you know, a little different. And then a lot of scientists just want to keep their head down and stay out of the problem and not get shot and lose their grants. I mean, that's an army of them just keeping their head down.
I'm going to show a lot of exams from journals. I'm going to show like whole samples, and then they have the word in the middle that says evolving, evolution. I'm going to remove that, the same samples, the content's the same. Yeah. Didn't add any information. It's just there because it has to be there because of the money.
Yeah.
That's the consensus also.
Yeah.
The mind of the modern society.
On that one, I have to step back. I think it's Philip Skell, who's National Academy of Sciences. I think he is. So the elite of the elite. And he did that research, and you probably know this, of talking to all these, was it either, I think, NAS scientists. If Darwinism's not true, how would that affect your scientific research? And I was stunned to hear the answer. All of them said, not at all. Then he interviewed NAS. Well, it's a narrative gloss added on later, you know, put it in the paper, put it about Darwinism, but the actual research, it's not being tested. It's not relevant. I was stunned when I saw that.
It's all over. I had this experience in my chemical department, professionally. We know that, you know, it's very hard, impossible to prove anything, you know, but it's just the mud, the status, they want to keep it. Why risk his neck? Say something, lose his grants, or be pushed aside and make projects coming. All right.
There's only biases. Everybody has a bias.
Everybody has bias. And it's hard to find against bias.
And it's staggering.
Like in my lab, we have a system because we work with the crime, it's a crime lab. So when we go to do the experiment, we bring our input.
Right.
How to filter everything we're doing from what really happened there with the sample we have. So it's a lot of hard work. That's a, just to say, this is one small example that we're not doing any synthetic stuff. We're just removing molecules from big protein. That's what I do in order to inject in a mass spectrometer, so you can inject protein there, just simple molecule drugs. So it's hard work, you know. You have to, because it's forensic, you have to go before judges, you have to testify in court, sometimes, not all the time. Thanks for that. And then, one mistake, a defense lawyer, I said, throw it. Good mistake, forget about it. So, this is simple chemistry, not complex at all. So imagine all of this. In order to be able to prove anything, you have to bracket the samples with two different systems from different companies. With regular molecules and with deuterated molecules, the same molecule that when we change the hydrogen to a heavier hydrogen. So it's kind of a print system. You can see it easier. This is an analysis. All of this to say, for a lawyer or judge, say, okay, so it's a minus 20% chance that you're right. Yeah, that's about it, what you call 20%. We're not saying that the numbers we put there is absolute. This is the number. No, it's all plus or minus 20%, up to 25%, and this is acceptable. So, just imagine, Holly, you know, it's so complicated that, like, he puts drugs in a glass, a fire glass. When you start making my extractions, I have 10 seconds to work back something. And I said, some technicians are not careful enough, they use 20 seconds, 15 seconds. What's the difference? The difference is that that drug, particularly, has affinity to the glass wall. It gets stuck, so we can lose part of our experiment in the walls of the tube. So just move the tail. The task is pretty big. But as I mentioned, God gets all the glory. It gets bigger and bigger. And they're going to spend eternity, trillions, quadrillion years. You never see how big it is. Amen.
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 Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel.
Thank you.
Wow.